This week on RSVNB Update, it's Valentine's Day and we've got a new quest, Once Upon a Slime. King Slime, a shrink machine, and inside jokes make perfect RuneScape quests. We discuss. Then we dissect Modjang's whiteboard TED Talk and break down where mining is going. This is RSVNB Update, episode 764, recorded Thursday, February 13th, 2020. Ole Yeller and the Slimes. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVNB Update. It is Quest Week, once again, a surprise Quest Week. You know, these Quest Weeks are kind of creeping up on us, and we only had three of them last year, so hopefully this one here at the start of February is a good omen that we'll be getting more of them this week, or rather this year, because, I mean, we love quests here, and quests are what make these RSVNB Update episodes really, really amazing. And to talk about the most recent adventure in questing in RuneScape, we got Diana from Clan Quest joining us. Welcome back.
Hello. Not been on here for a few months, but it's nice to be back.
Yeah. You made your first appearance with us when we did the talk on the Needle Skips.
Mm-hmm. So I've done Needle Skips. I've done Cook's Assistant. Or was it Chef's Assistant? I always get them mixed up.
Yeah, me too.
The Cheesecake one.
Yeah.
And then Desperate Times.
Desperate Times. Yeah. Yes. And of course, Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
Tanis 79 in game. And I am Shane 12088, and we're going to talk about Once Upon a Slime. So, little novice quest, fairly innocuous at the top. It says, you know, head on over to Peter in Rimington, and there's no requirements but a romantic soul and a strong stomach. And, of course, that's
understanding. Yeah.
Because this is Valentine's Day, of course, this week when you guys are hearing this.
It's all about love, Shane.
Yeah.
It's all about love.
Yeah.
Slimy love.
Yeah, and you know, when this quest
the best
first
kind.
Oh boy, I feel like we're already going down the rabbit hole on this, aren't we?
What do you expect? We got a quest, a love quest about slime monsters. I mean, and a guy in Remington that I don't know what he's saying. I don't know if he's from Louisiana or
what?
Or oh, what? I don't know. Some, like, I don't get it. I couldn't understand
what
a word he's saying. It's just the weirdest. Like,
about you?
Hey,
the name's
yeah,
Peter?
Just stuff like that.
I didn't do it.
Someone said it was supposed to be Irish, so.
Oh.
Maybe there's some kind of, like,
oh,
Irish
yeah, that would make sense. Maybe.
It's, that's a, okay. What we're talking about here is Peter's accent, which I think we can get to in the, when we actually get to talk about it.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start from the top then. Let's start from the top. So you head on over, talk to Peter, and he says he's trying to create a Valentine's Day adventure for King Slime. And I just want to say this before I turn over the storytelling part to you, Diana, that I completely forgot mm-hmm. about King Slime, that was a thing.
So did I, actually. Yeah. I didn't actually play the, it was a time-limited event
yeah.
when he first appeared in
yeah.
King Slime. I totally forgot about
Me
that.
Me too. And do you know why that is?
No.
Because it was out the same week the Needle Skips was out. And we
oh,
had
November 2018.
Yeah.
Of course it was.
And we had to cut that section from the show because that show was too long.
Ah.
So that's why neither of us remember talking about it.
Yeah, because I remember there was a slime in-game, but I didn't actually engage with the event. So this was all a little bit new to me.
Yeah. Mm. All right.
But it was a direct lead on from that.
Take us away. With let's just do a bit of a general overview of what Peter wants us to do and how things shake out from there.
Oh, right. So Peter, who's the idiot who created the slime in the first place. Hang on, let me just get the summary of the quest up. Yeah, he's back at the end of the slime event. I remember all the players kind of kicked the slime into a portal and it was gone, never to be seen again. Or, as it turns out, he was seen again. Yeah, basically, it's back in Rimington and we need to get rid of it again And Peter's genius plan this time is to create a queen slime and to get them to go on a date. And then they'll be happy and live happily ever after. And that's the premise. And, yeah, it kind of all
Could
goes downhill from
simple?
There. I wonder. I wonder.
And, you know, they make it out as if it's a simple thing to get them to go on a date. You know, they need to make King Slime attractive for Queen Slime. And there's a very unique way of doing that. Is there anything we want to talk about before we get to the top hat part? Because that's effectively what happens next, I think, right?
Yeah.
After some dialogue.
There's some quite funny dialogue. I think the dialogue for this quest was quite well written. I think Mod Campfire was the writer and designer for it. And it is funny, like when your player character is talking to Peter and saying, "No, that's a really silly idea. We should do something different." And then you get this brilliant cutscene of the Queen Slime kind of slopping along in the background while you're talking, while you're arguing. And then obviously it turns out that Peter's already made the Queen Slime and is the World Guardian of all people to sort it out. But yeah, that cutscene made me laugh a lot.
Yeah,
it was quite
well timed. You're just sitting there, and then
there's this monster going on
like,
in the background,
shuffling in onto the screen.
Yeah, the comic timing there was pretty good. Yeah.
And I think Tannis maybe missed that because when I was watching your stream last night when you were doing the quest, you had your magnifier focused on the chat box, and then in your macro view of the screen, you see this big pink thing moving by, and you know, you had no idea that it was there, and that.
No, I mean, well, and you saw, like, I'd have to, like, zoom in for the dialogue, and then when I would catch a cutscene going, I'd try to zoom out real quick, and then I would realize, oh, there's a dialogue box, got to zoom in again.
Yeah.
And that was, so, yeah, you saw how quests work, huh, Shane?
Yep. Yeah. All right, so you need to get the top hat for King Slime because, you know, who always says that a top hat won't make someone more attractive, right? And in order to do that, you head on over to Thessalia, or I don't know how.
Thessalia?
Thessalia? I don't know how.
I could be completely wrong there.
Yeah,
I'm terrible at pronouncing things.
Yeah, same. You head on over to the clothing shop in Varrock, and she will give you a top hat that you need to put on the King Slime, but of course it's too big, so you need to shrink it down. And you know, there's some dialogue throughout here about the King Slime fiasco and whatnot, as your character called it. And I think this is the point in which I will turn it over to you, Tannis, because this is probably the part where you I think where that amusing piece of dialogue came through that you were laughing about. Or you were both laughing about.
Where you're supposed to give her a good tonguing?
Oh, Christ, yeah.
Give her a right good tonguing. You say so. All right.
I think this goes back to the silly accent and slang that was being used. Like, I've seen a couple of people say it was Irish, but to me, it's more kind of generic northern / Scottish. Like, there's some kind of Brummy in there. There's a bit of Newcastle in there. There's a bit of all sorts.
I was trying to think of what that word was, because Rummy?
Brummy. Birmingham.
Okay. Oh, okay. I thought that meant something else, and I wasn't sure if the other word was derogatory, so I didn't want to use it. So,
oh, no. It's just kind of, we use, like, Scouser for a Newcastle accent, or Brummy for a Birmingham accent, or that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of a mix of generic northern accents and slang.
So does it have a different connotation in the US? Because
I mean, I have no idea how it works in the US. Like, it's quite interesting. Like, I don't know how the slang would have come across to you guys.
Which one are you in particular thinking about? The tonguing?
The tonguing.
That one. I mean, I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, navigate this one, Diana. Have fun.
see, it's kind of hard to separate it out.
It was obviously an innuendo. It was obviously that kind of comic effect. But yeah, it is slang over
here.
Nice
job.
What does it mean for slang, out of curiosity?
For slang, it would be, well, like it was used in the quest. It was kind of, you've got to give her a good talking to.
Okay.
That use in the quest was like how the slang's used, but obviously it's also an innuendo for something quite obvious that
when someone does something wrong, I shouldn't say you ought to go give him a good tonguing.
I mean, you could try, but you can see how well that goes down.
All right, fair enough.
I feel like that might be a reward, but I mean, stretch your phone.
Excuse me, a reward? All right.
Shall we move on?
Let's moving move on. On, moving on. So you get the top hat from the clothing shop in Varrock. You bring it back to Peter, and oh, it's not the right size. Now you got to take it back to the little shop south of the bank in Varrock, the East Bank in Varrock, and Ava is there. And remind me where she was from initially. In game,
is that the accumulator, Eva?
Eva, is that Ava?
Ava is with an A, and Eva, I guess, is with an A. And that, speaking of pronunciation, comes down to my pronunciation on that.
Yeah. So there's two. Eva with the E was from the Breaking the Storm event.
Okay.
Remember when we were building the boat to get to Anachronia?
Right. Okay. So that's where she's from in the past.
Ava is the scientist from Ernest the Chicken.
Yeah, and that's an entirely...
Who then gives the Ava's accumulator.
Yeah, that's an entirely different case there. Yeah. So
very similar, though.
So when you dive in to use this machine, because, you know, you talk to Thalsia, and she says, oh, I thought this would work, but, well, you can go shrink it at Eva's little shop south of the bank here by the rune shop. And, you know, this is the part of the quest that, I don't know, would you guys call this a puzzle?
Yes.
Okay.
This was the single puzzle.
All right. See, sometimes I don't know if you can call these things a puzzle if there's not a larger aspect to it. I guess I consider this as maybe a little plot device that you have to step over.
I guess it is, yeah. I'd count it as a puzzle.
I mean, I think it's a puzzle. I mean, had I not had a miraculous time with it, I probably would have hated it, cussed, and definitely called it a puzzle.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you lucked out completely, though.
So, yeah, I mean, it's fine with me.
Yeah, because... let's just say here, and somebody can check my math on this if I'm wrong. According to all the choices that are available, it should be a 1 out of 260 chance to guess this. And Tanis got it on the first go.
To elaborate on what the puzzle is, though, you've got a little shrinking machine and you've got to configure it. So you go through a series of options where you have to select the right one from each menu. And Tanis got the right one 6 times in a row.
And I even had the eeny, meeny, miny, moe. One of them.
Oh my god. So. Is that brute forcing or is that luck? I can't tell.
I'm going with luck. And it's used up for the next year. Damn.
Yeah, and you know, there's different parts of the machine that you need to manipulate. The first one is a button. The second one's a temperature gauge. Then there's another button. Then there's what they call the mode of functionality. A certain voltage that might need to be applied or not. And then a control lever. And there's various different options for each of these. And it turns out that the correct answer at the end of the day spells shrink.
I felt so stupid when I worked that out. Like, I had to get both clues from Eva to get it. And I thought, oh, she said, oh, it's related to what the machine does.
Right.
So I was trying to be really clever about it. And yeah. Trying to say, oh, what like meanings can I get from all of this? And then she said, oh, the first letters of each word spell something out. So I wrote them all down. And then stared at it because I'm useless at, you know, working out anagrams and stuff.
Right.
It took me a few minutes to actually work it out. But then when I saw that it spelled out shrink, I felt so stupid. It's like, oh, of course it is. This is easy.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
And for the record of what these are, they're the silver button, hot, red button, increase, no, and KSL.
Yeah, shrink.
For shrink. And, you know, I was doing things like, let's see, what kind of temperature do I apply to get something to shrink, hot or cold? Is a red button or a blue button the best? Is it mode of functionality increase? I thought that would definitely be decreased because, you know, you want to decrease the size of the hat, so to speak.
Yeah, that's the kind of logic I was applying to it all the
voltage
way through.
Voltage didn't
like,
make sense. And then the control levers.
It was so funny because... I applied absolutely zero logic and just clicked randomly on things I thought might be.
Maybe that's
no
how
logic
to
at
this
all.
Game.
Didn't think about it in the least.
And, oh, you know, at the end of the day, I didn't end up looking up because I was there for a while and I just thought, okay, this is getting late. I don't want to, you know, sit thumbing through this. I got it to 506 a number of times. And like you, Tan, it's one of the times I got it to 506. It was just a pure guess. And I should have been writing this down as I was going, but it did not. Anywho, after that, you shrink the top hat, and the action happens. And maybe I shouldn't say it that way. But the cutscene does go to black, and you think that King Slime is going to go away. But no. Something happens that you didn't intend on happening. After the hat is put on, they do their thing, and lo and behold, they merge into one huge slime.
There's a bit just before that.
Oh, what did I miss? I'm sorry.
There's a bit. Oh, that's all right. Now, when you go back with the big top hat, or the little top hat now, I suppose, and you put it on the king slime, queen slime takes one look at him and goes, nah. So, and decides she's, you know, attracted to something else in the area. So you've got to take, like, you've got to go poke her or something like that.
Oh, right.
And,
you got to do the...
You grab a handful of pink goo and you have to work out what's distracting her.
Yeah.
From that, and it turns out it's the witch's cauldron. So you use the little pink slime as like a little homing device to work out what it is.
Yeah.
So you get a bucket of the purple goo, and you throw it all over the king slime, and then yeah, the action goes down, as it were.
So he smells good. I mean, that's
basically, yeah, just apply Axe body spray and then go.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Ay, ay, ay. Oh, and then, you know, at the end of the day, after that, these folks move on, and it's happily ever after for the slimes.
Yeah. Well, then they join together and cue the music, Shane.
Yes. Yeah. All right.
And I think it just kind of slurps off into the distance.
Yeah. And then the question is, of course, will the slime that's combined to these two cause a problem again in the future? And are we opening ourselves up for a slime quest line now?
Oh my God.
I think we're going to see the slimes again. I think it's going to be having to do with their children next.
Oh God, slimes all over
the place.
I think
we'll have to save the kids. There is going to be something to do with the kids. Or at least it's open for that if they ever want to do another little thing like this.
Mm.
I would think. I mean, I don't know. Do slimes have kids?
I mean,
probably best not to question it.
They'd probably just there'd probably be a chunk of it that would just break off, and that you could consider that as the offspring, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, however that's done. I don't know. I don't know I'm not a doctor or a biologist.
True. All right. So after that, it's quest complete, and you know, you would. You're mentioned that you do get the little slime pet as the main reward, but if you go back and you talk to Eva, you do also have the ability to get the purple top hat as well as a reward. So that's mm-hmm. another top hat we got in game in addition to the treasure trail one. So
oh, I forgot
the purple top hat. I mean, that dude, that is going to just set off my male Chippendale stripper outfit. Awesome.
Oh, like, boy.
Telling you, I've got to. Yeah, you get the pants that are flared out, you know, and then you just have the painted chest, you know, with your, like, with your gold cane.
This is my dating site.
And then you put, like, the little masquerade mask on.
Yeah. Sirion's halfway there with that outfit already.
That's true.
Yeah, Sirion's still going around in his booty shorts, even in the middle of winter.
Now, I'm not sure who he's performing for, but I'm guessing it's a different audience. Oh, no.
And then also at the quest, one quest point, 2,500 cooking XP in the form of a lamp. So, and that's quest complete, Once Upon a Slime. And, you know, I think this is the point where we talk, could just say, you know, our general thoughts on this. And for me, I absolutely love this kind of quest. It gets back to the basics of RuneScape questing. It's something that the game has sorely lacked in terms of updates in a long time. Granted, last year we had the cheesecake one, but that one was pretty much a one-off. It would be nice to get back to this kind of thing where, you know, maybe every 2 or 3 months or so, we could just have a little bottle quest like this, or have a quest that can drop in if there's a slow update period in time. I absolutely love these little things. And granted, you know, we say little, but obviously no quest is little to build internally.
Well, but, I mean, how much of that, like, what do you mean? Because other than, like, the dialogue, I wouldn't think that there was much to this. I mean, it's very little graphics work, right? I mean, 2 slimes and a hat.
Well, the thing is, we didn't have a slime model for the slime event, I don't think. So that would be a new model. So as to whether or not you can call that a bottle quest, eh? I mean, it's one new model.
Right, so I'm just saying, like, I wouldn't think that that is a lot of development time up. Once it's written.
No, it's not. And every resource except for the slime is new. And from what I can tell, the male and the female slime use the same model. It's just a different texture and color applied to each one.
Yeah, they're equally ugly.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think this fits in the category of a bottle quest.
Yeah, I'd call it a bottle quest. I enjoyed it. When I logged on and saw, oh, there's been a surprise quest, I got, oh, this is great. And then I saw it was a slime quest and thought, this isn't great.
But you came away feeling pleased at the end.
Then I actually played it and it was laugh out loud funny. And it didn't take me very long. It took me about, 20 minutes, half an hour.
Definitely.
But it was entertaining and short. And I think I'll say the same thing about it that I said about the chef's assistant.
I don't know.
That one, the cheesecake one. Mm-hmm. I still can't work out which one it is. In that it's a nice short one to add to the roster of little quests. You know, just a brief, bottle quest. Brief little exploration of something silly and dumb in the best way. So I enjoyed it.
And you know what I liked about this quest? One, I mean, the humor. I mean, that was fun. I mean, just the one joke made it worth it for me. But this year, rather than doing another Valentine type currency event or a list of, check the list off, I thought it was nice to have just a little bottle quest in the place for a holiday like Valentine's Day, rather than just the same old kind of, events that we usually do.
Yeah, I prefer this sort of marker to, like you said, a currency event, which I personally find very irritating. I don't like currency events. And
see, I don't mind them, but I mean, I just thought this fit. It was just different. It was a good time to put it in, and yeah, enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was fun.
And, another thing with this, you have a personal memento from this quest, the hat and the pet. In addition to the memory of doing the quest. Whereas with the currency event, you don't actually have a great amount of story around it. You just have your regular skilling activities that then you unlock the various markers along the way. So, this is a better way of doing it. And I don't know what the development time is for a quest like this. That'd be a figure that I'd be interested to know, is that, if we're planning on doing a currency event once a quarter, could we perhaps have a bottle quest themed to something like that instead once a quarter? And that would be an interesting discussion, I think, to have.
It'd be quite interesting to hear how long something like this takes, because I think 2 devs were named as the, the creator. The one, Campfire, was the writer and programmer. And I think Mod Rain was mentioned as well.
Yeah.
That I don't think that includes any QA team or anything.
Right.
No, that's interesting. So,
remember, Osborne said that it said 6 to 8 weeks for a small update.
Yeah.
Right. But so the devs are the writers as well? They don't have like an in-house.
Well, sometimes there's a different writer and sometimes there's a quest dev, right?
Yeah, you're right. They don't have specialist writers in Jagex.
Like, but it's such a different area of expertise. Like, it's
tell me about it.
I mean, I don't. That's kind of weird to me, because I mean, writing like that it's just a whole different set of skills.
Yeah, I could talk about game writing all day if you want to have a chat about that at some point.
Yeah, that'd be fun. And you know, if another thing is, if you look at Plague's End, and I'm pulling this one out because there was so much lore in terms of Prif involved in it, Maud Osborne was effectively an overseer in guiding the direction of that story. But the main developers of Plague's End were John A. Of course, I almost said posthumously because that's what you call someone who's dearly departed. But he didn't die. He just left.
Stuart W. He's not dead, Shane.
I know. Some JMod made a similar mistake on a live stream or something like that before. Oh, he's gone on to a better place.
Oh,
someone has left.
What?
Gone to a better place.
I think it was Maud Ash on an old school team was asked about someone who left, and he said, "Oh, he's gone on to a better place." But nice. Of course, we know what someone going on to a better place means.
Yeah,
but that's not what he meant, of course. But anyways, sidetrack on that. There can be cases where there is overarching lore focus and a general narrative direction theme and different implementers on it. So,
well, I mean, and I get that, but to tell you the truth, like I think you could notice it, in You Are It, cause that was an Osborne quest, right? That he personally wrote.
Yes.
And if you,
same
you know, like
with Needle Skips, and I will shout about the writing of Needle Skips until the end of time.
Well, he's very creative. If you,
he's a writer. He, by profession, he's a writer. Okay. Like before he went into game development, he was a writer.
I didn't know that, but that makes. Yeah. There you go. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, if you look at the credits for You Are It, the developers on that were Days and Aerator, with Maud Osborne being the designer.
Yeah, I think in Jagex particular, from studio to studio, it varies a lot depending on who does the writing and, you know, do they even have writers. Like, where I work at Frontier, there are a few specialist writers who don't do any actual design work. They just do the, you know, they write dialogue and they write text for things.
Holy shit, you work for Frontier?
Yeah. I
love their games.
I work on Elite Dangerous.
Oh, wow. Cool. Yeah, no, I mean,
I'm going to derail that.
Cool.
But yeah, so, and I know at Jagex they do things a little bit differently in that generally the designers also do the writing.
Yeah. Needle Skips, Maud Osborne was, of course, the narrative behind it, and Maud Krista implemented it before she left, and then there was just the polish that was put onto it after the effect. So, I mean, you can have cases where the devs do the writing, and that is something that is indeed very unique with Jagex. So, you know, they are a unique company. We'll give them that in terms of both the updates they put out and the way they do things.
Yeah.
Now,
every studio has their own way of doing things.
Yeah. One thing I want to bring up is that, you know, there are people out there, and I'm not naming any names, who will feel that we've had a drought of updates since 120 Farming and 120 Herblore. Of course, we've had the PVM Hub. We're waiting for Archaeology, and there have been no quests since Desperate Times last summer.
Oof,
now, people are saying, you know, you get this novice quest that, for all intents and purposes, if you really wanted to, you could probably spacebar through it in 5 minutes. And, you know, there are people out there who do that. We are members of Clan Quest here, and we're not going to begrudge people who play the quest differently. We enjoy our quests for the narrative and the story experience that they provide. But one of the comments I saw floating around this week was that, you know, you wait this long for a quest, and it's just two slimes getting together, and that's all we got for a quest. Could Jagex do better is one thing that I heard with this. And, you know, my answer to that one is that if you look at quests from when RuneScape 2 first came out, or even RuneScape Classic, they were as silly as this, or if not more silly. And some of the quests were even shorter than this.
Sorry. This particular brand of silliness is very much in keeping with Jagex's style.
Definitely.
Like, this is a classic kind of stupid humor. Absurd. It doesn't take itself seriously at all. Which is great. Like, I really like that.
Ooh. Yeah, I think it's a good mix. And look, I have empathy for people that are questers, because, I mean, honestly, you know, I mean, I know there's somewhat of a friendly rivalry between some of the different communities in RuneScape, but questers really don't get a lot. Like, kind of have to acknowledge that. They don't get the same as what Skillers and PVM does.
Yeah, so, and to me, I see that as a bit of a vicious circle, because questers don't get a lot, so there's not many of us. So we don't get a lot, so there's not many of us. Right. Which I don't like at all.
Yeah, so I mean, I understand the sentiment, but I also want to go back to, you know, when we talked with Mott Osborne, and he kind of told us how they got into a situation of not having the updates that they had planned for or wanted to. And when you look at January, when archaeology was postponed, that was the big thing that was supposed to hit in January, right? So we were starting down this path. The only thing is they were better prepared and I think had a better cadence of updates planned, so that we only had 2 weeks, was it 2 or 3 weeks, and then PVM Hub hit, which was a big update. Now, last week's update, I'm not calling that an update. That's not an update.
Yes, it was.
No, it's not. That's nothing new. Shane, if I walk in your room and take away one of your toys, did I give you something?
We'll talk about that in the live stream.
No.
So, I mean, but I'm just saying, like, essentially, every couple weeks we have gotten something, which is way different than the drought that we had before. So there, at least there's
a good things going forward. Good deal more transparency this time around too.
Absolutely.
In terms of, we're actually making archaeology just a little bit more polished, and we've never actually had the opportunity to do this before, but our new executive producer, Maud Warden, is letting us do that.
Yeah, I think you guys on this podcast talk a lot about player sentiment, and I think that all this player sentiment is hanging on archaeology. Like, everything is hanging on at the moment. Yeah. And
it has to be good.
Yeah, I was saying in the pre-show that I'm kind of with the questers who are a little bit dissatisfied with the quest, this quest out this week, this quest week in, you know, inverted commas. Because of the context. The context is we haven't had a quest since last summer. And as someone who logs into play quests, that's a bit, When I logged in to do this thing, I hadn't touched the game for 3 weeks. Like, for me, that's not, like, now I've maxed and now, you know, I've got all my quest cape and anything. Yeah. There's not really much for me to do in game anymore. So having new quest content, which is, you know, why I pay my membership fee, would be great. Thanks. So everything's hanging on archaeology. I know for me, and I know for a lot of other people as well. That being said, I do think it's going to be good. Like, I appreciate why they're taking more time. And if it is going to be as big as it's implied it's going to be, then, yeah, more time, get it right, rather than rushing out the door for the sake of it.
And I'm really hoping with the archaeology that there's going to be some... Watch this. There's going to be some bones thrown to the questers because...
Well, you know, I'm already believing that archaeology will effectively be the lore skill.
Yeah,
that was the impression I got at RuneFest whenever I played the demo for it. I was so surprised at how much lore tie-in there was. Like, I was blown away by it. Like, this was a skill that featured lore from the top-down, bottom-up, however you say it. Which is, I've never seen that before. And if they pull it off, it's going to be really good fun to discover things through a skill rather than through a quest. I saw on Twitter today that Mod Orion has joined the team. The archaeology team.
Oh, wow.
He said to help with final polish and that sort of thing. And he was saying he's impressed with how much content, how much stuff's coming in with it. I think those were his exact words, which I found quite reassuring to hear because he's fairly no-nonsense about, you know, that sort of thing. So yeah, if people like him are enjoying it, then that sounds good to me.
Yeah, and you know, this is something that we meant to talk about in the monthly bit, but we didn't. And it goes back to what our core focus of 2018 was. And we're going back to 2018 on this. And Tanis, I slapped myself on the side of the head when I realized we forgot this. And this is exactly what archaeology is and what's been happening with the recent live streams about it. But it also pivots back to this quest, because I know everybody's waiting for the final rating on this quest. And that's managing expectations. And, you know, you can't have every quest be the needle skips, and you definitely also can't have every quest be Sliske's endgame. There is a core, I guess you could say, backbone of what makes a RuneScape quest, and this quest, Once Upon a Slime, definitely satisfies that. And, you know, just providing a little bit of a brief diversion from what you're up to in game, providing you with a quest point, and telling a rather funny story with Jagex / British humor thrown in.
Yeah, I agree with you on that
one. And that's the backbone of a RuneScape quest. And with it being something we haven't got since the summer, yes, we would like more, it is still a good quest on that front. And
yeah, I think if we're going to get to ratings, like, I would say, if outside the context, let's just take the quest on its own, ignore everything else, I would give it maybe 3.5 or 4 out of 5. Like, it's good, it's silly, it's fun. But with the context of there being an absolute drought of content I'm interested in at the moment, then that would drag it down to a 3.
Yeah.
I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a perfect way to rate this.
Yeah, that's exactly probably where I would put it as well. But I don't want to get too, I don't want to say like they can't walk and chew gum at the same time, because I 100% believe that they can. I think that you can have your Sliske's end games once or a couple times a year, and you have these bottle quests.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, when you look at other games, like take ESO for example, Shane, you might only get one, maybe two expansions a year, but that expansion has its full of quests. There will be one main storyline and a ton of side quests on top of it. So I 100% think that they can do it. And it's I mean, obviously it's always a matter of balancing your priorities and what's, you know, right now that's archaeology, that's mobile still, it's still circling around there. But I'm hoping at some point we get to a point where everything is in the game that they want in the game. And then you can start building you can start coloring it in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
filling in the blanks.
Have it drawn and you can start adding the color, you know?
I'm looking forward to when they finally release the roadmap. They've been talking about they have a roadmap in development at the moment. And I'm looking forward to seeing that. I do feel like they're preparing for something at the moment. Like archaeology is going to be the kickoff of something that they're not telling us about.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is quite exciting in and of itself, but it would just be quite nice to know what it is.
And we're also supposed to have that, and I don't know if this is still going to be the case. We'll have to see when the roadmap arrives. We're still supposed to have that quest team that's going to be producing quests throughout the year, led by Mod.
The episodic content team. Yeah, what are these guys up to?
Yeah, archaeology right now. Who knows what's happening after that, right? So
That's the thing. When we talked last week, Shane, this was something that I was really wondering about. You know, we haven't seen a video about the teams in quite a while. And I thought we were going to kind of be introduced to each of them and know what each was doing.
They did it on live streams instead. You know, we had the Mod Osborne and Timbo one about episodic content. We met Mod Mike through the live stream last year.
But that's
and
not,
Mod
but-
Hypnos for Core Experience.
I mean, I guess that wasn't what I was expecting. I mean, I guess, but here's my question. I keep hearing people talking about ninjas, but I thought the ninja team was gone and split up into all these other teams.
No, the ninja team exists. I think they're under episodic content.
But they are a specific ninja team.
There is a specific group of people there that does that. I don't know who they are, but they exist.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because like, I think it's a little confusing where things stand, you know, team wise and structure wise like that. But I'd love to get that like wrapped up so that we all know.
have some kind of corporate organizational chart.
Yeah.
why do you feel like you have to know that?
Well,
what difference would it make for you to know the team structure and what they're working on at the moment, or even not even what they're working on at the moment, but why, just out of curiosity, I'm not trying to attack you or anything for this, but like just out of curiosity, why do you feel like you have to know?
Specifically, there are some things that are with the ninjas that, I want to keep track of. And I wasn't even aware that they were still a team because of when they came out a couple months ago and was talking about the episodic team and the, and the other ones that they mentioned. I never heard the ninjas mentioned. And since I know that there is certain updates with them, that's why I wanted to know personally.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that. That's fair.
All right. And, I think once the roadmap is out, we'll get a better picture of how this all fits in. But tying it back to Once Upon a Slime, it just comes down to the fact that when there's a gap in content and some people out there in the community are expecting this to be a bigger quest, I'd say, perhaps. They're a little bit let down by this. But as I said, it satisfies the core backbone of what a quest is in RS, and that's good enough for me, personally.
Yeah. I may have sounded a bit whining earlier when I was ranting about it, but honestly, is a good little quest.
Yeah,
like I don't want to do the developers down on it.
Yeah, it ticks all the boxes, and it's there. And like you said, 3.5 out of 5, potentially 4 out of 5, but maybe a 3, just given the fact that it's been a little while since we had a quest. So I am 100% behind you on your rating on that. Tanis, do you feel any different, or is that good for you as well?
No, actually, I think 3 out of 5 is exactly fair, because there's been other quests that I would give a 4 to. You know what I mean? That was a lot bigger and a lot more involved and stuff like that. So I just want to say, like, this was a fun little quest. I love the humor. It was a nice little bottle quest. But yeah, I think a 3 is pretty much on the money. I mean, I think that's fair.
That we agree.
All right. Well, then, let's move on into the patch notes for this week, because there are a good number of them. Some changes as well to War's Retreat. Little questions here and there that people were wondering about with this. I'll just get started with these PVM hub changes. Adrenaline urns can now be filled through the adrenaline crystals at War's Retreat if you use those adrenaline urns. A tooltip has been added to the Marks of War currency in the currency pouch, explaining, of course, that it is related to War's Retreat. The entrance to War's Retreat in Draenor has been renamed to be a bit more thematic, and of course this is referring to the little thing that you click on next to Death's Hourglass, just saying that it will actually teleport you now to War's Retreat. The PVM...
What did it used to be called? Sorry.
You know, I honestly don't know. I honestly didn't even notice this had it not been for the patch notes, but it was one of the ones that was highlighted in the main news post, so I just mentioned it here. I don't really pay attention to the detail that much on naming unless it's in a quest.
I never actually saw it, but I'm guessing it had to be something like PVM Hub.
Yeah, probably. Well, probably just War Hourglass or something to War's Retreat or
whatever they're calling it internally. Maybe.
Right. The PVM Hub Reaper portal now checks for all normal access requirements when pointed at a God Wars dungeon boss. I feel like we talked about that patch note this week, but just a little niggling issue that keeps popping up, I guess. What?
Nothing.
Okay, fair enough. Added a message for...
Just the words you use crack me up sometimes.
Added a message for people burning logs on War's campfire. Boss portals can now be interacted with from a longer range. And you know what this means, folks? It means that if you're standing at the bank chest, you can click on your boss portals directly from the bank chest.
Just throw yourself over there.
Well, come on now. That sounds OP, Shane. Is that OP? That sounds OP, man.
It could very well be.
I'm just imagining people going straight from the bank, kind of leaping across the screen to get to the portals.
It actually has been designed in such a way that after you click on the portal, with that one click now from the bank, it's actually one surge distance away.
Oh, how about that then?
Yeah. So it was actually designed specifically for that in mind.
And, perfect.
David, who we had on when Wars Retreat launched, was absolutely over the moon for that. And I'm sure you remember that, Tanis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just got to make sure you hit that crystal before you jump in the portal.
Yeah. Teleporting to Wars Retreat via the standard spellbook will now clear active combat effects such as bleeds. So just like any other banking area, it'll make sure that you don't die randomly in there after your fight if you're poisoned or something to that effect.
I just found that teleport this week. I felt like a chump.
Oh.
I'm like, wow, I am an idiot. I have been...
Did you purchase it?
Load. Yeah.
No. But I mean, did you purchase it before this week?
Oh, no. I didn't know. I didn't know about it. Like, I guess I did, but I didn't. I don't know. Somehow or other, I didn't figure it out. So I had been, like, load telling into Tranter this whole time.
Ooh.
Yeah, I felt like an idiot.
Entering Wars Retreat now turns the camera.
They mentioned that on the live stream.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
And somebody suggested that they put in a toggle for camera turning.
Toggles, you know, for everything.
I think they're right, though. I mean, essentially what they said between the lines was, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah.
Well, that's essentially what they were saying. They're like, yeah, half of you would like it, half of you wouldn't. I'm like, yeah, no, you're right. Right about that.
And I mean, I think camera turning is fine as long as it's not going to make something disjointed. Like, if you're teleporting to, say, outside of a runecrafting altar, and I don't think there's anywhere in game that does this, don't turn the camera for that, because if you're runecrafting, you have your camera angled in such a way that when you teleport to your spot, you're going to be able to click the altar. Then when you teleport back, you're going to be able to click on that bank chest as well. But I think if you're going somewhere where you're definitely going to context immediately towards either a portal or bank, and based on how your camera is set up, if you're looking in such a way that you can see both the portal and the bank already, I don't think there's a big issue with positioning the camera.
I mean, that's what happens in the Max Guild, right? Like, every time I go there, I always have to click it.
Yeah.
Little north thing. So
there you go.
I mean, I don't know. I'm used to doing that, so...
And, I mean, they could do a toggle, and that would effectively stop all camera turning if they were to do something like that. But at that point in time, there are times where I think they need to do that in order to grab the player's attention.
And I'm sure it would break something else somewhere else. It would – cutscenes would probably – I don't know. But it would break something, and it's not necessary.
I have to always come down on the side of no extra toggles if we can avoid them.
Simplicity.
Exactly.
Keep it simple.
Yeah. You know, that's one thing I miss about the new incarnations of macOS is that back in the day, and this is talking in the era of 10.3, 10.4, 10.5, macOS was set up in such a way that there was exactly one place to change a setting in the operating system and one way to get to that setting. But it's dithered over time and it's become more like Windows. And I don't really like that. I like the old classic versions of macOS in that regard. Anybody who used macOS in the day will know what I'm talking about. Which I don't know. I assume that is neither of you two.
No.
Can't help you there, Sam.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to be coming up on 2 decades soon of using macOS as my primary OS.
Wow.
Would you like a balloon?
No.
I love this chick. It's awesome. Love it.
Why would I want a balloon for that?
So you just sound so proud of it. Like,
well, yeah, I think it is in a Windows world.
Oh, you poor oppressed Mac users.
Hey, we wouldn't be using.
Sorry, Shane. That was mean.
We wouldn't still be using it if it wasn't Unix based. I'll give you that.
Okay.
All right. Back to the patch notes. Sorry about that, everybody. PVM wise, specifically for Araxor, they've made these changes based on player feedback to bring Path 3 more in line with the other paths. Now, on path three, that's the wall one, and the damage that Araxor does when charging the wall has been increased. A successful dodge will now do 100% of the wall damage, and an unsuccessful attempt will do 50% of damage. So that means if you're successful, you're going to get through it on the first go. And I remember once when I did Araxor in tutorial mode, I was told to avoid path three because it wasn't nearly as easy as the other ones. And I think if you're able to dodge successfully with this now, path three would probably be one that you would choose on this. They also reduced the... You've never actually done Araxor? Yeah, I've only done it.
I've never tried Araxor yet.
I've only done it in practice mode. So, I mean, what's that say, right? So, they also reduced the time between its first charge attack and the time between successive charges after a failed dodge has also been reduced. So that should help along the way. Tannis, you ever fought Araxor?
Yeah, it didn't go well.
Okay. Isn't that what you got for Reaper last night on the live stream?
Yes. Yes. Well, we were going to do Reaper, and then he didn't give me anything worth of crap, so we just went and did some twins. But Araxor is one of those that's kind of, I don't know, I might have a better shot now that I have some extra tools in my tool belt. But that wall part was something I just never could, I never got it right. So I don't know if it was a sight problem or just, I never could get it. That and the light, had a lot of trouble trying to stand in the light.
Right. Yeah. That is very hard to see even for me. So I could only imagine how that is for you.
Yeah. But as for like standing there and fighting and doing your anticipations and your freedoms and like all that, I was fine with that. I mean, I'm fine with getting away from the cleaves. It was just that like middle section of the fight that just, yeah. And I don't know, maybe the end of it would have killed me, but I never made it that far. So I don't know.
All right. Players can no longer deploy Dreadnips when fighting the brothers at the Barrows. Well, of course that's a good change to make. We all know how easy the Barrows have become, and I mean, Dreadnips were kind of OP. So, I think this change makes sense. You know what? I'd be interested to see. What kind of money Barrows can bring in for somebody who is around the 100-ish combat mark, and how much money hard mode Barrows brings in. I'd be interested to know that.
Straight Barrows, not rot.
Straight Barrows, because you can do it in hard mode as well.
Why would you waste Dreadnips on?
I don't know. I don't know. I remember before the money went bad, I actually used to go kill the Barrows brothers, you know. That would be something I'd actually do. And this was after EOC, before the money went bad on it.
And I did it. That's how I did. Why I did a lot of the Mauritania quest line was so you could get the
right
tellies there.
Yeah, the blood teleport thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. And, you know, of course, all these things are going to be out of whack in terms of where the money comes in, but the money making guide on the wiki provides a good general baseline of where things fall relative to one another. I don't know that they're exactly going to be 100% right in terms of the specific values on here, but let's see. Barrows Rise of the Six is 8.3 mil an hour, and High Level Barrows is 1.4. So probably not worth it. 1.4 hard mode. Barrows.
1.4, huh?
Yeah.
I can go pop bubbles for 2 to 3.
Pop bubbles?
Yeah, I can go do divination.
Oh,
two, 3.
Okay. Pop bubbles, nice.
I forgot that was the slang term for that. Yeah. Apparently next AOD is 32 mil an hour right now.
Wow.
Talos 16. But, you know, this is all highly dependent on how
they
much
said
you die.
16 on Talos?
Yeah, they did.
That ain't what David says.
Exactly. And, you know, that's why I said these things on the money-making guide have to be taken with a pinch of salt.
Well, and I'm guessing Talos is so variable because of the enrage mechanic with its loot.
All right. Auras are no longer deactivated on death in dangerous PvP scenarios. There are no longer old ground tiles used in Drainer Village near the wheat field. And, you know, this is, of course, talking about the new form of texture that you see in areas like Catherby, for example, and now Drainer Village. If you want to see what the old ones looked like, you go to an area like Yanil or Karamja for that to see what those looked like. Interfaces, saws, snow globes, and Arctic pine logs can no longer be equipped by the bank interface. You can see we're still weeding a few of these out a few months after the bank rework came out. Fixed an issue in which destroying golden fish eggs from the bank wouldn't allow you to reobtain them.
Oof. We talked about that last week with Mount Ordinary.
No, that was about prestiging the aquarium. This is a different one.
Oh, this is another bug with the aquarium.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
This is about that if you destroy an egg, you wouldn't be able to, a golden egg for, say, the monkfish, you wouldn't be able to get that golden egg again for the monkfish.
I hate to say it, but like, if the aquarium was more popular, we probably would have known about these bugs quicker, right?
Maybe. It's probably something they've known about for a while, but given it's a relatively low priority one, kind of in terms of the actual effects, it's probably something that, you know, it's just been on the backlog.
Yeah, or the aquarium bug that we saw a few weeks back, shine the light on the aquarium, and these ones were found after that. Something like that could have happened too. Mm.
These kind of bugs do cluster together. Like when you find one, you end up finding a whole lot of other ones. And yeah.
When making offhand darts, the interface will now remember that you want the offhand version and will not try to make you create regular darts. Good. As bonus XP weekends coming up.
Yeah.
On mobile, fixed a minor issue with misaligned highlighting on the Magic Book interface. Now moving on to skilling, which is where we're going to get one of the biggest patch notes of the week soon. Hold on to your pants, everyone. Not this one, but a few down the line. When fighting moss golems, social slayer partners can now deal with each other's mossy rock NPC spawn prevention as well as their own. And, you know, this is another thing many people don't think of, but social slayer is indeed a thing in this game. I know people who actually do that somewhat regularly, but it's just something I don't really hear talked about all that much.
See, I don't think I've ever tried it. I'm reading over that patch note. I don't actually understand what it's saying. Like, I get the individual words, but putting them together. What? Social slayer partners can now deal with each other's... never, doesn't matter.
Well, and it seems like social slayer is more of a lower level activity.
No, it's not. The people I know who do it are post 99.
But where, I mean, I didn't even think you can't go to Morvan, can you?
Yeah, you can. You can do it for all of them. Yeah. You can even do it for Lanakea if you want. I know people who do social slayer on Eretz.
See, I mean, it might be fun because you're together, but at the same time, it's Slayer, so it's like, get away from my shit. You know?
I want that XP. But you guys share XP, and you can also share potions as well.
Yeah, get away from my XP.
Okay.
And my money.
It just lets you complete tasks even quicker.
Exactly. The Moss Golems are a Lost Grove Slayer creature, and they have a special attack. Where a mossy rock appears and you need to deal with it.
Yeah, I remember. Okay. I haven't been to the Lost Grave in ages, but yeah, I know what they're talking about now.
Yeah. Smelting gauntlets now count towards the blacksmith outfit set bonus. I feel like that should have happened a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's a leftover from mining and smithing. Huh?
Yeah. The remote farming machine now updates the status of a fully grown Calquit tree. And the price of Supreme Growth Sundry Potions has been increased from 400 to 1,000 beans.
Nice.
If you're waiting on me, Shane, you know how I feel.
Yeah, I was waiting on you.
Well, look, I mean...
The reason this was done, just before you go on this, was the Stink Shrooms, because those gave somewhere around 10K plus per harvest. And that's the potion you need for that.
Right. And these are what you get from the beans, the magic beans, right? Those potions?
Yeah.
So I feel like the Stink Shroom's XP could have been adjusted rather than hitting it with this for a few reasons. One, I don't know why on earth you would be using your beans for those potions to hit the mushroom patch. You're going to get four times that on Elder Trees. Like, I don't get it. Why would you do that? But if you are going to do that, fine, okay, cool. Then this is something that's starting to drive me crazy, because I'm starting to figure out that, like content, it's not like it's dead content. Jagex shoots it. It takes it out back and shoots it.
Well,
like, yes.
You know, just
why would you ever bean farm now? I will never bean farm now. They took it out back like Old Yeller and shot it in the head.
But I just want to highlight that Stink Shrooms were initially meant as a way to get mushrooms to feed your Zygomites. They weren't meant for fast XP.
Right. So why would you nerf the XP rather than the potion? Because first they turned them into grow potions, which I didn't love.
I thought
that
was a good idea.
I know you did, because you love this stuff. But, you know, even once we had that, to then further do it, it's like, Jesus, man. Why couldn't you hit this from the Stink Shroom angle? Like, wasn't that an option?
You get 8,000 XP for harvesting one. And then
right.
You get a certain number.
So why couldn't that be toned down rather than
mushrooms.
Hitting the potions? Like, it seems like that one.
Or sorry,
sense.
these ones give the flies. Sorry, 40 stink flies. Actually, you know why they did it this way? Because the cost of the stink flies were too low.
I'm getting so tired of this market manipulation. I can't deal with it. Because you're. Why would you just undercut?
1954
content.
GP for one stink fly.
Alright, sure. Okay.
And
I'm
the
sure
stink shroom spore sells for 274K. So you got 40. So you know you're losing money definitely if you plant these stink shrooms. So there was no reason to plant them aside from the XP, and that's not the way they were intended to be. They were intended to provide a source of flies for your frogs.
Right, so why wouldn't they cut the XP for the stank shrooms rather than to increase the price of the potion?
Yeah, I could actually see that working in this case.
I don't know. I just, it's like, you know, the farm was so good and then it gets hammered, right? Okay, we dealt with it.
Because the dinosaur farm came out.
No, we dealt with it because they didn't touch the beans. And yeah. Then the dinosaur farm
but
came out.
But this is the sundry one. The woody ones weren't touched, though. Which is what people are going to be using for their big XP.
But then what would be the big deal about this? If you're you. If you're using your beans for this, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know. I come talk to me because I'll teach you a little something about efficiency, because I just don't think that would be the best way to do it. But I mean, seriously though, I mean, save up what you got. We got a double XP weekend in a week. Buy your elders. Like, that's what you do with potions. That's what you do with magic beans.
Yeah. Yeah. And, for context on this, the woody growth potion, supreme growth potion, is 4,000 beans. Sundry is 1,000.
Buy them now. Buy them now, guys. Buy them now. Because they won't be. You know
Leafy is 1,000. Bushy is 1,200. Fruity is 2,400. And we already talked about Woody. Why is that?
Something will happen with the price of elder logs, and we got to do something. Got to do something about the price of elder logs. You watch.
Well, as long as elders don't
quote me later.
Well, as long as elders don't get put on a drop table, we'll be fine.
Hear me now, quote me later.
I don't know. I think you're being a little bit paranoid on that.
A little bit, but we just keep getting hit on.
But who was using sundry potions? You yourself mentioned everybody uses the woody ones.
I don't know why you would.
It's 600 extra beans.
I don't know why you would. But that's, I don't know.
Diana, what do you think? Give us an honest third party picture here.
God, I honestly don't know enough about all this sort of stuff. I haven't really engaged with farming for a while.
Okay.
Sorry to say that, Shane, but I've not really engaged with skilling since I maxed, which I know is a bad thing, but yeah, no, I can't really comment.
All right.
I'm out of the loop on this.
Sundries can be used on mushrooms, hops, allotments, and evil turnips.
Never understood why you'd want to grow evil turnips, but sure. What are they used for?
Hops good for anything anymore?
Hops are good for grapes.
Hops are good for grapes?
Yeah, you grow grapes in the hops batches.
And so you could grow those god vines.
Yeah, you could before they changed it. Yeah, that was the main reason they changed it, is because people were using sundry potions.
So why are we talking about mushrooms when that is probably a much bigger...
Well, because with the change, all you still need a grape seed and you still need planks. Whereas before the Ranch Out of Time in 120 came out, you could just pop one of these magic beans in the grape patch and get reeds, the tar one, or grapes. And that was good money back then. It's, of course, been nerfed with the fact you do need a source grape seed. But... Maybe this change to the sundries is also to work on the grape market. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I know once bitten, twice shy, and the week before the mining thing came out, I said, this looks like it'll be okay. And then it hit. I was wrong. I'm not giving an inch anymore.
All right. Well, I want to get to the live stream now, so I'll just go through these last few... fixes here. Fixed an issue where rune pouches wouldn't fill with rune or pure essence, as well as changing rune essence into pure essence. I had no idea you could convert rune essence into pure essence. I don't know what that's talking about.
You know, to this
about.
Day, I don't understand the difference between the two.
Well,
you use pure essence for the higher quality or the higher value runes.
Yeah.
Is that right?
And you know, in hindsight, this is probably something they could revert and get rid of, because back in the day we only had one rune essence when the rune crafting skill launched. They had to add pure essence as a members only item because rune essence was being botted.
Was that why?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, was that the little bot train you'd see in Varrock running from the bank down to the...
Yep. Yeah. So they made it so that if you were free to play, you would only get rune essence. But... if you were members and under level 30, there would be a chance that you would get pure essence. And then after level 30, you would get pure essence all the time.
Okay. Yeah. I never noticed it before then, but I think I still have it.
April 20th, 2006, that happened.
Wow.
I know someone whose bank actually doubled in value because of this, because of all the rune essence he had. And when they did this, all the rune essence that people had in their banks was converted to pure essence, if you remember.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. This is just one of those stories from a long time ago. Yeah. Fix some overlapping security checks that caused forced teleports along the east cliff side of Priftinus in the Tyrannan Woods near the Arendar Pass. I guess if you got yourself into a bit of an odd situation there, it would...
Feels like an edge case to me there.
It would make it so you don't get stuck.
Yeah, someone's stuck. Help.
Some poor wild guardian stuck on the cliff.
Yeah. The Friends Trail option is now listed only once in the gameplay settings under social. And this is what I was talking about with having settings only in one spot.
So they should just rename that to the stalker option. It's what it is, right? You look over, you're like, oh, Shane, how you doing? Where'd you come from? Trailed you, man.
Yep. Trailed you. Exactly. there are a few people that I enjoy using this on for that exact reason. And finally, fixed an error with Clanniversary broadcast for players that joined clans before early April 2011. All right. Let's move on to the live stream. And, you know, this one is, I think we're going to have some questions about this as we move through it, but that's okay. That's what live streams are for. And I don't know. Just let's get a quick general overview here. What'd you both think of this live stream before we get started on it?
I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was a nice varied bit of content to cover. Right. I really liked the activity pets section at the start.
Yeah, we're going to show some of that art off on the video version of the show. But let's just dive straight into that.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I really think Mod Perky's kind of warming to the role of being on the couch and looking after things.
Yeah, he's doing pretty good. Yeah.
Which is really nice to see, actually. He's kind of growing into it.
Yep. You know, for me, that was kind of probably the highlight of the stream. And it's really weird because...
What, Mod Perky?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, because I hoped that everything was going to go just the way that it has with him taking over the streams and stuff, and he's really done a good job. So, that was nice to see. And I've watched this live stream twice now. The first time did not have a good reaction to it at all. The second time, I'm like, okay, not quite as bad as what I thought the first time. There's still some things I disagree with, but it wasn't a bad live stream, and I kind of thought that the first time. So I don't know what that says that you have to. I had to watch the stream twice, but yeah, I totally did.
It's different lenses,
maybe. Yeah, because I didn't talk to anybody. I mean, I was listening to it live. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I had there was no influence there. I was just like,
yeah. All right. Well, let's dive into the activity pet side. They only have concepts for three of them because the fourth one is still being fleshed out. But first one, of course, is Richie, the classy magpie, which is, I believe, the money-making pet, I think.
Yeah, the money pet.
And the good part about this, and this was highlighted, is that with the bird nature of it, they could potentially use the... I think they described it as... what was the term? But suffice to say, they could use parts of the model that they get for other birds in-game and just put a different skin on it, I think.
They said that about the deer as well. Like, they're using this as an opportunity to possibly update some rigs and some models for animals, which is pretty cool.
Which means at Christmas time, we could have a really nice-looking reindeer.
Yay! Ooh. I love the look of the money pet. I think he's really cheeky and really fun.
Yeah.
Like the concept art, he's got a real character.
And it's so much different and so much more fleshed out than the magpie summoning familiar. And I think that's what initially tainted my view of that is I know what the magpie summoning familiar looks like. So it's like, do we really want something that's going to be in that same similar vein? But looking at this concept art, this is entirely different in that regard. And it's got its own character to it, so to speak.
So, yeah.
I think mine was just that. I didn't get money making from looking at it initially. I thought there were so many other things I could kind of symbolize that, but this week it looked a lot more in lines where you could kind of...
Yeah, that magpie's going to swoop down and steal your GP.
Yeah.
Next up is the clue scroll pet, Artemis the Compass Deer.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Really beautiful.
And this
I want that pet. I want that pet so bad.
And this one came from a really elaborate player drawing. And they have managed to simplify it down in a way that keeps the essence preserved, but really, like you said, it just looks so lifelike almost. But at the same time, it's got
really
the fantasy feel to it. Elegant, yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing that winning game. I think Derp's going to get it, but I want it as well. I'll do clue definitely. Scrolls for that pet.
Yeah, I wonder what the threshold will be on that. That'd be interesting. Yeah.
Is it RNG, do you think? Of course it will be, because it's a pet drop.
Yeah.
But,
It's going to have rotating parts on it for the necklace and crown.
Yeah.
A floating clue scroll as well. And, you know, the very fact that if you look at the concept here, it says rings rotate in different directions and at different speeds. That's going to be that's just some of the detail that's going to be going into this, too. Mm. So,
I'm really looking forward to seeing that one.
Then, of course, we get to Mune, the area pet. And this is the one that we talked about when this was initially happening, that, you know, does it make sense for there to be an aquatic region or an Anachronia one? But they did concept those, and it was just a question of, is Anachronia too precise for this? Or should we just go with the original six of original ice, desert, swamp, wilderness, and forest?
It's like Pokemon.
Yeah, you're right. That's what I thought, too, on this. Definitely has
it looks good. It's another good-looking little
cat. Yeah. And we don't know what Zez the RuneScore pet's going to look like, because that is still in the works in terms of the concepting stage.
Yeah.
But all in all, these look pretty good, and this is going to be the update that's going to be done by the third-party studio. And then it'll either get put into game when there's a lapse in content, or just if they decide to put it in as their own update, it'll arrive.
Sorry, go on.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just saying, I like that they clarified what farming it out meant, how that they do all of the drawings and designs themselves, and then hand it off to have it like made.
See, I was about to say the opposite. I thought they didn't really clarify it very well. Like,
They
had a go. They had a go. But there was some confusion about what outsourcing actually meant. And I think, Shane, you got a little bit confused there as well. They handing it out to a third-party studio. Like, it's more like Jagex do all the concept art. They do all the, you know, they described it as the design brief in-game.
Yeah.
In-house. And then it goes to kind of riggers and modelers. And then they kind of make the thing. And then it comes back to Jagex. So it's not really another studio. It's like... I'm going to compare it to QA outsource. So it's like a specialist company that would do, okay, we don't make games, but we make assets for games, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I just use the term third-party studio because that's how I've heard Mod Osborne call it before.
Okay, that's fair enough then.
But the
it's not like it's going to another game studio to make.
Right, but the concepts are done internally.
Yeah, the artists
and the design
in-house,
whatnot. And, you know, what we saw on the live stream isn't – the full concept. Granted, there are definitely going to be other pages and other views of it that are going to be sent out as well, because when you do these things, you want them to be as detailed as they can so that the person you're farming it out to doesn't give you something that you don't like.
Yeah.
And because that's a waste of time and money for everyone.
You mean like apps that break and don't work the way they're supposed to? Like that?
What was that?
I said like apps that don't work like they're supposed to. Because you farmed them out.
It sucks. I don't know about that.
Okay.
No. It's more of a kind of...
It's
more of crossing all your T's and dotting all your I's before you send it out kind of thing. I think that's the right way of talking about it, right, Diana?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
You just got to make sure that the people who are going to be doing it do exactly what you want them
to.
Yeah. Yeah. The simplified explanation, I guess, must have worked for me, just because I'm like, okay, so they draw it and then someone else.
Yeah.
Someone else
does. I just remember there was some confusion on Twitter about, you know, what's actually outsourcing mean and what's actually going on.
Right. All right. Fair enough. Okay. The mining and smithing talk. This was good. I thought this was good. So I'm going to start off with the biggest thing here. And, you know, Tanis, you laughed when you heard this. Mod Jack. We love Mod Jack because he's just so honest when he comes on, right?
I do like Mod Jack, yeah.
No more changes are planned for the system of Stone Spirits. The fundamental feedback that they're getting about Stone Spirits is related to the low-value items that the boss are dropping, because that feels bad. And he says that there is no problem with the profitability of PVM. PVM is in an okay state, and these are his exact words now. We agree that getting a low value drop feels bad, and the fix to that is to take that drop off the drop table or replace it with something else.
Thank you. Yep. Because you didn't need those in the first place. Should have just taken them off the damn drop table.
And he said this is work that needs to be evaluated, and they need to determine if PVM is in a bad state, then that would be more of a Timbo discussion to have. And Stone Spirits, quite frankly, is not a mining and smithing problem.
That's what, yes, I'm glad you said that, because that is what I wanted to bring up, because he said it's not a problem with the mining and smithing system. I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank you.
But at the same time, and Sirion pointed this out to us, is that Jagex has said that they wanted to try and increase the value of stone spirits by making ore more rare.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's fine. I know what the explanation is. I don't agree with it.
Yeah, but, and we'll get to that. I mean, exactly
happened. You know, I understand it. I don't agree with it.
Yeah. And the hope to this is that with recent changes with respect to stone spirits, that they can make ore go up. But they also did highlight that the way mining and smithing was, they don't necessarily want people to have 16 accounts out there farming the skill.
Yes, that was the problem. For your
full AFK.
I mean, I know that we were told the problem was the value of stone spirits, but that wasn't – maybe that's a problem. I don't know. Whatever. I don't care about that. What I thought was a much bigger issue was, yes – farming 16 accounts, like, and so see, Shane, what they're doing, the new fix totally fixes that. Yeah. instead of taking the money and smithing update and saying, yeah, it was nice, we spent 2 years on it, but let's take it out back, old Yeller. No, they didn't do that.
All right, and at this point the whiteboard session started.
Mod Jack's TED talk.
That's a good one.
Yeah, so the whiteboard came out, and I was a little bit unclear if this was Porky's idea, if it was Jack's idea, but it was interesting. I think if you were to increase production value on this, you could do the exact same graphs except produce them as images and put those on screen instead of doing a live drawing on a whiteboard. I think that would be equally as effective, perhaps. Just a bit of feedback on that side of it. But I think
it was quite entertaining, though.
It was. It really was. And it captured the attention, which is almost what the sole purpose of a whiteboard is to do.
Yeah. Oh,
and you know, sometimes, you know,
before I go into the various graphs that were drawn, I want you to say what you initially felt about the whiteboard.
Right. Well, that's what I was wanting to mention. Let me just say, like, I don't necessarily always think about different learning styles, and I should have, because there are visual learners out there, right? I obviously don't think about that because I don't see anything. So, you know, visual learning is not something that I do. So when I saw them bring out a whiteboard and go into what the formula was, why they did the formula the way they did it the last time, I felt like I was being talked down to, and that like triggered like a defensive kind of reaction. That was the first time watching it, and we had our little discussion.
Right. And whereas for me, it felt as though I was a part of one of their design planning sessions.
Right. And I guess that makes sense because like you said, that's how it's done. And you know, this is how it's done. And I'm like, right, but I'm trying to think like the audience. But with that, I really didn't take into account that some people are visual learners. It's just so far from my reality that when I hear someone with a, you know, doing that, I'm taking it as like you're talking down to me, man. Like I'll get it. I get it. You can tell me. Like I'm not stupid. But it was probably just for the benefit of all the people out there like you that do way better by being able to see something.
Right.
So, yeah,
Diana, how do you feel about the whiteboard?
I liked it because it gave a very nice, clear, concise explanation of what they were doing and why.
And what
and that
was
needed.
What is, what's going to happen, and some potential things that were suggested both internally and externally.
Yeah. On that. So I can... It didn't really feel like a lecture to me, though. I can understand why you might, you know, why it might feel like that to some people, Dennis.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed it. It kind of lightened the mood a bit because I know the mining and smithing, the whole stone spirits thing has been a bit controversial kind of ever since it was released a year ago now.
Yeah.
So it just brought a bit of a lightheartedness to it and, you know, helped them explain what was going on.
Precisely. So we got three graphs here. And for those watching on the video version, I'm going to go through the annotations here that I made on this. And for those not, I'm going to do my best to explain it. So the first graph drawn has your mining performance on the y-axis up and down, and your stamina on the x, the horizontal axis, starting at 100 and going down to 0. And the way it worked previously is that if you were at 100 stamina, you would have 100% mining performance. Then if you went down to between 99% and 1% stamina, you would fall down to 90% mining effectiveness. Then, when you hit zero stamina, you fall down to 80%. And this is why people were able to AFK mine so successfully, is you were effectively still mining at 80% effectiveness with zero stamina prior to the nerf that came in last week.
And that's what allowed you to be running so many accounts. Now, if it's just one person, AFK mining, I don't think you have
no
the same
deal.
Problem. Yeah, I don't think you have the same problem at all.
Do you? Sorry, I'm just going to jump in here. Do you remember, because I've just remembered this. Before Mining and Smithing came out, I remember I was on a podcast and Pranassus sent in a question saying, do you think that Mining and Smithing is going to bring up problems with bots? And I roundly said no, because obviously I didn't see something like this happening.
Right.
But I think I'm going to have to eat my words, because obviously there has been a problem.
No, I don't think so. They're not bots.
Well, you know, multiple accounts, like ghosting accounts.
Yeah, and there was actually a comment brought
up
specifically by Jack on this. He said that the goal of this was to exactly see what would happen if we gave something that was valuable yet AFK. And he said it was an experiment to see how players would respond. And with that, it's not something that they would do again in the future now that they've seen how this worked. So they knew full well that this could be a possibility.
Yeah.
And they wanted to see if the game could survive with that. And the answer is that no, it needed to be tweaked. Or if mining could survive with that.
Yes. You know, and but here you go again, Shane. I mean, this is what we talked about last week. How are you going to attack the problem? Are you attacking it from a supply side? Or are you going to attack it from a demand point of view? And my point is, like, yes, Masterwork is great, but nobody uses it. I use it because I melee. Actually, people that are good at fighting stuff don't melee.
Yeah.
So they have no use for it. So there's no demand.
And you just
there's no demand for the core.
And you just want to prove that us on the supply side are wrong.
Yes, I do.
But anyways, that's a topic for a different day. The solution that was brought in and is live currently in the game is a linear decrease starting at 100% stamina and 100% performance all the way down to 20% when you have zero stamina. And we were wondering how this was last week, and we were going to put out a nibble on this, but I decided not to, seeing as that was entirely invalidated by this, but it was linear. And exactly as we said, remember we said, yeah, you're probably going to be mining around, you know, 60, 65% performance. And that was their entire intent, was that that was exactly what happened. We were right that it was around 60, 65% if you were doing rock opportunities and the perfect juju. That's exactly what it came out to.
Yeah. And we knew that. I didn't like that.
Right.
The players felt
like that. But one thing we forgot that they also brought in is that free-to-play mining was heavily affected by this, because agility factors into your mining stamina. And agility on free-to-play is capped at 5.
Hey, whatever it takes, if they want to say it was the free-to-play, whatever.
No, I seriously believe that 60 to 75% isn't exactly where they wanted it with this. So I believe that is more the case than the free-to-play one. The free-to-play is just another side question associated with it.
Well, yeah, right. And, yeah. You know, in a way, I think, gosh, I think I asked for this in a way. I asked for the whiteboard, and I didn't even know that's what I was going to get. Because I did want to know what they classify it as active play in mining.
And it was Rock Opportunities.
If you notice, Shane, they said, Mod Jack said, 4-tick mining is supposed to be the best, period.
Yeah, and it still is.
Okay, right. But Rock Opportunities is supposed to be up there too, and it shouldn't have been.
It shouldn't have been knocked down that far.
It shouldn't have been knocked down like that, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we got to where we need to be, so that's really good.
Yeah, and it, in particular, I mean, where we need to be, the change that's going to be coming in, and, you know, people were looking around the studio to see if they could find someone to implement it. Mod Shogun implemented it because apparently it's a one-line code fix to make this happen, and it was already done by the time they got clearance to do it. But the way it is now, if you're mining at 100% stamina, you're going to have 100% performance. Between 99% and 1%, you'll fall down to 90% performance, as you did before. And if you go full AFK at zero stamina, you fall down to 20%.
Yeah. That, to me, is a much better solution. Much more fair.
Yeah. And, you know, they brought other ideas in as well, like maybe doing parabolic curve or cosine related. And they said they could have done that. And it would have solved the problem that players were having, as well as fixed the AFK side, but it still would have hurt the free-to-play. So that's why they went with this one that falls straight off.
Right, and here's the crux of it, right? Some people are, you know, you guys are all worried about the value of, but I'm worried about, you spent 2 years on a mining and smithing rework. We loved it. It works beautifully. And if you cut too deeply into the things that makes it wonderful, well then, you just killed it because I don't want to do it anymore.
Right, and everybody agrees that mining is the star out of the two.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah. But you were supposed to be able to be like, not AFK, but you know, like Mod Jack said, clicking every 30 seconds to a minute. I don't think that is unreasonable. Like, I think that's just fine. You can't tab out of something and look at it in 30 seconds. I mean, come on. I mean, I guess you could, but, you know, don't tie me on that. I'm just saying. It would have taken away from what one of the aspects that made mining and smithing rework special, different, and something we wanted.
Yeah. I concur. And, you know, we'll be in a good spot. And for people wondering when this is going to come in, it's, of course, pending QA. So I could say that would probably be anywhere from maybe 2 to 4 weeks at this point. Just, I'm saying on the high end of it. I don't know what the backlog is currently on that, but probably within the month, I'd say. So
cool.
Okay, so that's the mining and smithing side of this. Wasn't really much talked about smithing. Well, of course, wait to see if there's enough demand on the smithing side of this to make ores go up and if this helps. But nonetheless, the Q&A then turned to a general Q&A sense. And this is something that was glossed over when people were talking about what to add to the Max Guild. Initially, they weren't going to put this in there because it would devalue Ooglog. And, of course, we're talking about the potion decanter.
That was So the first time I watched the stream, this is the part that just absolutely
But did
me
you
off.
Catch
no
the
end.
Part that they decided that to decant flasks, you would still need to complete the As a First Resort quest?
Yeah, but what I had noticed was it was the PVM double standard on full display. We can make PVM as OP as it wants to be. It doesn't matter. You can't make it too good. Now, skillers, we almost didn't put a decanter in your damn max guild. I mean, even though that's more of a skilling thing, we almost didn't do it because I'd be OP.
And I just want to say at this point that the decanter in Prif has been changed to be able to decant flasks.
Right, which...
That wasn't in the patch note, but it's there.
You know the funny thing to me is, like, it's almost ass backwards in a way because, like, in so many other realms and other games, it's the combat that's constantly being tweaked. It's that's what gets nerfed and buffed and nerfed and buffed and buffed and nerfed.
Yeah.
And, it's not the static skill. Like, you know? I'm like, ah!
Also, the max guild changes have been bumped down because Mod Raven is wanting to do something that will excite people in the lead up to archaeology. So that's been bumped down a bit.
Changed I'm excited for that, by the way. What's Mod Raven planning?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's going to be good, though.
PVM Hub Achievement Garden, part of the initial Epic Jam design. But there was so much that had to be done with this, and it wasn't worth it from the aesthetic perspective. It would have been too cluttered.
Yeah.
And they would have had to put extra resources into it. But they wanted to get this out before archaeology.
So does that mean that they can't add that? They can't bring them, you know, bring the models down, make it a little bit smaller?
Well, like, they could definitely add it in the future at some point.
Okay. I just think that would have been... Look, you can't put all of your pets in your house. You can't carry more than one at a time. And if you're using a legendary pet, you can't show off any of your others. This would have been one small way that you could kind of...
And one of the things is that I don't know how it works in RS, but there are some games internally where you can use the same model and just scale it. And there are others where it won't work. So I don't know what the state of that is in RS.
Yeah, well, that's for you...
I have no idea. I have no idea how that works.
Over here. Can't you just shrink it? Hell, I used to shrink a machine last night. <What? laughs> Go see Eva.
And that was pretty much it for the live stream. Anything else on the live stream you guys want to bring up?
I don't think so.
Alrighty then. We do have a listener question this week, so we're going to move on into that right about now. But before we do that, I'll just take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters for this episode. So this week, I'd like to thank Brock H., Cameron, Cass, Christian S., Darren L., Diana, Jason S., Joe M., John P., Kyle, Rastafa, Rippeth, Seth W., the Naked Captain, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your wonderful support here at RSBNB Update. It truly does mean the world to us. And if you're wondering what we're talking about, just head over to patreon.com/RSBNB and gain access to early show notes. You get a mention in them, and you get access to our monthly bit, the entire back catalog of monthly bits going back more than a year now at this point, where we talk about very special things, one topic or another relating to RuneScape each and every month. Last month was on maintaining a positive outlook as content creators, because that's something we need to do. We also have the RSBNB Update Roundtable that'll be happening on the Saturday of Double XP weekend this month. And of course, we're going to be producing a variety show, which is going to be interesting. We're testing that in place of Inside
Update. A variety show?
Yeah, Inside Update this month.
Oh, that's exciting.
We're not entirely sure which ones we're going to go with yet. But, you know, this is our chance to dive into the wider community and maybe showcase things like some funny memes, showcase things like maybe some art. And granted, that's hard with an audio podcast, but we can show it on the video version and we can describe it and then put links in the show notes for people to have a look at it. The potential of doing topical debates also came up. So the variety show is something that's going to be fun to produce, and it's just a bit of an experiment, so to speak. And of course, if you want to give the ultimate gift, $5 a month, you get a shout out each and every week on the show, and you gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use for the clip show at the end of the year. And there will be a few of them from this episode. So with that being said, if you want to see more about this or the monthly bits or inside update or the round table, just visit us at patreon.com/rsbnb. And should we reach that mystical $99 a month tier, well, that'll be movie night in the RSBNB Discord with, well, I'm sure Tanis will have his picks and I'll have mine.
Yes, yes, we will.
So that should be good fun. So patreon.com/rsbnb, and thank you to all of our Patreon supporters for making what we do here possible.
Thanks, guys.
All right. So from Sunset Fish, do you ever find yourself slipping, or do you ever find RuneScape slipping into your bedtime dreams, or find yourself daydreaming about RS when you are away during the mundane parts of living?
Who wants to go?
I'll go first. You know, I've had the daydreaming side, definitely. I don't think I've had any RuneScape-themed dreams before, but I will say that one point in time, many, many years ago, when I went in to have teeth extraction done for wisdom teeth, and, you know, you get put under for that one. I actually had a dream while I was out, believe it or not, and I had no idea that would be possible. And I had a RuneScape dream while I was out. And that's the only time it's happened, when I was under anesthetic.
Nice. That's amazing.
Wow.
So, I don't know what caused that. But, yeah, it's happened to me before. And under a very unique set of circumstances.
Now I want to interview Shane when he's just coming out of anesthetic.
He's off his tits on.
Yeah, like one of those, you know, videos that I do. Where it's like,
no, you know what happened when I was just coming off anesthetic there? I ripped the IV out of my arm and I started getting up and starting to move.
That's not good.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Sounds like a wild ride.
I am the kind of person who honestly believes you should only be in bed if you're sleeping or you're dying. Yeah. So, I mean, when I'm up, it's time to go, and I don't know. I honestly don't have patience for that kind of thing. But I was able to get up, and granted my legs were a little wobbly, but I was fine. But we're venturing off more into the side story of it, and there's a running joke around RSBNB now that if you're to get any dental work done, do a clue scroll beforehand. because I was on RS before I went there, and that's probably why the dream happened.
Probably why, yeah.
That was my best clue scroll reward ever, and this was back before dyes existed, and I got a pair of third age plate legs.
Very nice.
Wow. Damn.
Anyways, your guys' turn. Whoever wants to go first.
Tanis, do you want to take it?
Sure. So I can't say that I have ever had a RuneScape dream. I have had gaming dreams where I've just been stuck on something and done it for, you know, hours, and then miraculously had a dream, woke up next day, tried it, and beat it. And it's real weird, but that has happened. But RuneScape-wise, I have found myself thinking about it not consciously, but then I would realize all of a sudden I wasn't really paying attention to what was going on around me. And I'm like, what was I thinking? And I would be thinking about, this is what I'm doing in RuneScape tonight when I get on, you know, like, so yeah. I try to actively fight against that because, you know, the one thing you don't get any more of is time. So I desperately try to be as present as I can when my family's home and stuff. But yeah, there's been moments where I'm like, oh no, I have no idea what my wife just said. Thinking about doing something tonight. Oh, this is gonna come up later. Oh no.
Yeah. See, I find this quite an interesting question, actually, because I can't tell whether it's talking about the game or the story, because I interpret it to be kind of a, do you, you know, find yourself thinking about RuneScape gameplay? And that doesn't really happen to me. But I don't know whether people have gathered this already, but I'm a writer. Like, I write a lot of fiction, and that does include RuneScape fan fiction at times, like just for a bit of fun. So I think about the plot and the story and the characters quite a lot, just kind of when I'm working in that sense, if I'm sitting down to write something. Right. Like,
I mean, I think it can definitely go either way, right?
What do you mean, either way?
Either way in terms of the gameplay or the lore behind it. Because, you know, if you're thinking about the lore of something, you are, in fact, thinking about a character in a game. So therefore, you are thinking about RuneScape is the way I see it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But I don't really, like, think about what I'm going to do in the game. It's more kind of how could I use the story? How could I use the characters to tell an interesting story? Like, if I'm going to write myself a little quest, like if I'm going to write myself a mini quest just for a bit of fun, how am I going to do that? That kind of thing. So yeah, I do think about it quite a lot when I'm outside, when I'm, you know, not in game.
All right. Any dreams?
I don't think I've ever had a RuneScape dream. Not that I can recall.
All right.
No.
Fair enough.
Nothing exciting on that front, I'm afraid.
I will say that I have had dreams before, and not recently due to recent TV series, but I have had dreams before where I've been imprisoned inside of a Borg ship.
Oh,
Star
no.
Trek. Yeah. But anyways.
Well, you are kind of part machine, right? Just a little bit.
All right. Thank you, Tanis. Moving on. If you guys want to send your own questions in, email questions@rsbnb.com or leave us a DM on Twitter @rsbnb. And we'll endeavor to get your questions or discussion topics on the show. And as Sunset Fish illustrates, they can be about anything you so desire, RuneScape or otherwise. Okie dokie. So in tech news this week, we have a release date for Half-Life Alyx. It has been announced that this will be launched on March 23rd. And, you know, this is something that we talked about at the tail end of last year, and we questioned, is this something that's going to get delayed like other Valve games have in the past? But no, lo and behold, it is arriving on March 23rd as the prequel to Half-Life 2. And it's the game that's going to be VR only.
VR only?
Yep. VR
Why?
Exclusive.
Yeah, that's kind of a different decision. Let's see how it works.
What was the announcement today that was VR only as well? Oh, the Prince of Persia. Prince of Persia game that apparently is going to be VR only as well.
Interesting.
Which would be an interesting trend if that takes off.
Gonna have to get some VR.
Yeah.
I've tried it. I get motion sick in it. Like, I've tried it with Elite Dangerous. And it's just like, oh my god, I cannot deal with this. It's so strange.
I've done it one time, and like, so I couldn't see the menus, crap. But otherwise, it was so much better for me.
Really?
Oh my god, yeah.
Well, that's probably due to the way your vision works.
Yeah, it's because my vision has all these holes in it. So like, having it in like a 3D kind of world, you know, like. Like, I played this one game where these dinosaurs were coming at you, and you were holding these guns, man. You had these machine guns in each hand. And I felt like I was in the Matrix, man. I was like, ba 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 ba. Dude, it was so cool. I loved it.
Yeah, and, you know, in addition to being VR only, we made headlines of this when it was announced. This game is going to require at minimum 12 gigs of RAM and a GTX 1060.
Crap.
Yeah.
So this is an enthusiast game, right?
It really is. It's if you have the VR headset, if you have one of the great computers and you're a Half-Life fan, this is for you.
That's a lot of ifs.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, I think after a while they're going to have to make a non-VR version of it. Because
I have to wonder about what the demand's going to be for that, for only a VR game.
I mean, they're going to need to do stuff to change the way the interface works, because if you look at the screenshots that are posted, you can see that you're supposed to interact with the game world with your hands in the VR sense. So they're going to need to change all that out. But All right. Tanis informs me that he has a beagle alert, so we'll just move on to the next tech news. Thank you, Tanis, for slipping that in. I appreciate the notice on that one. I don't know. I just want to say also something else before we move on to this. I had it in my mind. There's something called the Steam Hardware or the Valve Hardware Survey, and the most popular video card that is used by people who play games on Steam is the 1060. So that's why that's the minimum requirement here. And if we look at the other information regarding this, and lo and behold, they do actually have one here for the VR headsets. Um, 30% of people who answered their survey in January 2020 have an Oculus Rift if they do have a VR headset.
See,
but that doesn't say how many have one or don't. Also, the most popular amount of RAM is 16 gigs, so they're tailoring this precisely to their audience.
It feels like a very narrow audience.
It is narrow, because only 0.4% in total have a VR headset.
Yeah.
I'm guessing the reason Oculus is so high is just because it's so much cheaper. I mean, five, you're looking at $800 bucks, right? Somewhere around there. Oculus, yeah. Looking at like four. So it's a big difference.
Yeah.
But you need a lot of room for the Vive too, which is what I would have. Don't get me wrong. If I had the money in the room, that's what I would have. But
yeah, but 0.04 or 0.4% of people have a VR headset in the survey. Less than 1%.
Yeah, it's tiny. You know, I think VR gets a lot of its popularity from PlayStation, because it's so much more full, it's in so many more homes. You don't have to have that huge, powerful PC.
Oh, sorry. It's only Oculus Rift 0.4. If you sum up the other ones in terms of HTC Vive, that's 0.35, Oculus Rift S 0.32, Windows Mixed Reality 0.1, and then we go into the hundredths of a percent there on that.
It's still not
so
a lot,
I mean, it's less than 2% of everybody who plays on Steam that has these.
Like, it feels like it's almost too early. Like, I know VR is becoming more adopted and people are getting used to it and it's becoming more fashionable. I don't know enough about this to really comment properly, but it just feels off to me. Like,
yeah,
not enough people.
I think you're right. I think you're exactly right about that. And I think one of the barriers, at least on the PC side, is you do have to have, you know, bare minimum. You have to have a pretty beefy computer.
Yeah.
Versus,
because you don't want to be having those FPS shifts when you're using VR.
Right. Well,
you're
looking at like what, 1500 between 1500 to 2000.
Yeah.
You know, like as
you're
an
looking
average,
at, you're looking at probably a 1080 at least.
Right. And so like, You can get into VR through PS4 so much cheaper. Like, if they could ever make it equivalent to that on a PC side, I think you would see a lot more adoption of it.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at the GPUs as well, minimum is 1060. That's what 13% of the people have on the most recent survey. Then it just goes, you know, right down from there. 0.7% have a 2080, 0.7, 2070. That's the TI. I mean, we're looking at something that's going to be able to be played by single-digit percentages of people who use Steam currently.
That's kind of crazy, too.
Yeah, that just doesn't make sense to me, like, just instinctively. But there's no real rationalization behind that. It's just me going, what?
All right.
Really?
I mean, especially with this Half-Life. I mean, I've never played Half-Life, but I know how big of a deal it is. Like, people love that game. Like, they love that game. So, to have a new addition to it only open to 2% of your possible customers?
Well, that's why it's Half-Life. It's a prequel, not Half-Life 3.
Well, yeah. Well, they can't count to three. You know that.
All right. Let's move on to our next piece of tech news. And this is going to be a change that's coming down the line for Google Chrome users. And this is in relation to HTTPS pages. So when you look up at the top of your address bar, you see the little lock or you see HTTPS. And what they're going to be doing is they're going to be blocking something called mixed content downloads. So if a web page that you go to has a non-HTTPS URL calling in a resource like an image or a script or a file download that it wants you to download, Chrome will eventually block all of these downloaded files, because the general sense is that in the modern era, insecurely downloaded files are more of a risk than the HTTPS files, because they can be files that are swapped out by malware. That this is exactly what the Chrome blog says. It could even be eavesdroppers that are wanting to look in on the pages that you're viewing. And this is part of Chrome's gradual shift to move away from HTTPS entirely and block these downloads, just to ensure that people are going to have enhanced privacy and just be a lot safer from the malware front on this. And once Chrome 86 arrives, it will be entirely blocked. And for anybody wondering what we're at in terms of current Chrome, we're on Chrome 80. So we're going to start getting warnings about this in the next year or so. We're going to start seeing this become policy for our web browsers if you use Google Chrome by the end of October 2020. Is going to be a big change. And I mean, I hate to say it, but if a website is on HTTP in this day and age, there's probably some reason for it, or it's an old, neglected website. And if you're on an HTTPS website, it says HTTPS in the address bar, and it's trying to download non-secure resources, there's no reason why it should be doing that. So I think this is a good change to make for people's security. And we talked about Firefox a few weeks back, how what their security and privacy initiatives look like. And it seems as though 2020 is shaping up where all the browsers are trying to make their pitches again to their users to say, no, we're the most secure. No, we're the most secure. Something on that effect. But this is what Chrome users can look forward to as we march on through 2020. I don't know if there's much else to say about this unless you guys have any thoughts on this.
Over my head, Shane.
Okay. Well, just know then that if you're on a website with the locker, it says HTTPS up at the top, you won't be able to download non-HTTPS content on it. That's all there is to it.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a,
so there goes. Okay.
What's the problem?
No, I mean, it's not a problem, but I'm guessing it's going to be a lot harder to get ROMs and stuff like that.
Well, it depends if the ROM site is HTTPS secure and it's trying to download from that non-HTTPS URL. So, yeah, it'll just have to be something that you work around, and I'm sure you could find a way around it eventually. All right, next up, Activision Blizzard has pulled all of its games off of NVIDIA's GeForce Now streaming service. So this means things like Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, Overwatch are gone off of NVIDIA's streaming service, which, you know, we talked a lot about streaming last year from Stadia to, I think, the PlayStation.
Oh, that turned out, Shane.
It's going. It's not the bang I think people thought it would be, but it's going. It's going. Activision Blizzard services on the NVIDIA streaming service. And I don't know. I mean, there's just so many different game streaming services out there. It's hard to know what's what anymore in this day and age. And I think this could be the precursor to Blizzard launching their own gaming streaming service.
They're going to have to start pirating games again. God.
Yeah, I think that Blizzard has more important things to worry about, right, than starting a new streaming service.
Oh.
Well, I mean, yeah, they need to deal with their Warcraft stuff. but
oh yeah,
why? What's happening with that?
World of Warcraft Reforged.
Yeah, it's not good things if you watch the news. Like, people are pissed. So, and I didn't go like into big details. I just saw
this would be a good thing for you guys to discuss, actually, and to talk about if you want to have a look into it and how they're treating their modding community at the moment.
All right, Tanis. Oh, that's
I think you'd enjoy it.
All right, Tanis,
I think you'd
get
a good discussion
we'll look
out of
into
it.
Definitely for next week. Yeah. On that, but I mean, do people use gaming streaming services? That's, I think, going to be the recurring question that we have here.
Can I ask a really stupid question?
Yeah.
What's the difference between a streaming service and something like Steam?
The streaming service basically makes it so that if you have, you know, say a bare bones laptop or a Chromebook, you can play games in 1080p using your internet connection, and it's not rendered locally on your machine. It's like watching a YouTube video and just controlling it effectively.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you'd need a seriously good internet connection.
Yes.
And kind of unlimited broadband.
Yes. Like, we're looking probably north of 50 megabits to do 4K if you wanted
okay.
to. Okay. I think 30 megabits is the barrier for 1080p.
Right. Yeah. I can kind of see why that might appeal, but at the same time, also not.
You know, it all depends. Like, I think there is a place for streaming, game streaming services. I think there is a place for a Netflix of games. You know, I don't think Stadia was it, because number one, Stadia, you had to buy the hardware, then you had to purchase the freaking game, like that.
Wait, on top of the subscription fee, you have to then buy the game.
Yeah.
What's like, the point of the subscription fee then?
Exactly. Like, that's my point. But honestly, like, I did a few months of subscribing to the PlayStation PC streaming service, and I loved it. Like, because it had all these old PlayStation games that you could play, and it was great. But, I mean, there was actually too much content. Like, I couldn't play that many games. So I'm like, well, I'm paying too much for the amount of stuff that I can actually play. So I let it go. But, and I didn't have any problems with that. Like, it was smooth. It was fine. Like, I really enjoyed it. And that was like $15 a month.
Yeah.
I didn't have to buy hardware. Didn't have to buy a game. None of that.
If you just want the best experience and you don't have, you know, the internet connection to run one of these things, just buy an Xbox and get Game Pass.
Yeah, that's another one.
And then, I mean, there's a huge library of games. You just download them and away you go. And, you know, that's why I've yet to be convinced that streaming works, because everybody I know, I've not met someone who doesn't have a console or doesn't have the computer to actually run the games. Hence,
yeah, I think there's a huge part of doing gaming that involves having your own hardware and customizing your own hardware and, you know, having ownership of it in that sense. So
right,
streaming almost seem like appealing to that sort of audience.
Right. Well, what's appealing is to be able to just have access to a large library, and that's what PlayStation did. Like, then they added new games every month, and you know there was like, I forget what it was. It's been a couple of years now, but I want to say it was like around 300 games. Just, I mean, that's a significant addition to your library.
Yeah.
I didn't need it for hardware or anything like that. I didn't need it because I couldn't play any other way. It was just like, oh, $15 to have a whole nother 300 games?
Hell, yeah, that's the purpose of Game Pass. That's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, I've gotten great value out of it, too. So
yeah.
All right. Let's move on to achievements of the week. I believe, Tanis, you're getting us started, I think. That's what we said.
Yeah. All right. So we have Alex Peaks with 99 cooking on February 12th. Then we have Agronia with 99 invention on February 11th. And Whitey with 120 hunter on February 11th. Oh, man. I'm sorry, Whitey. You got it post. You got a post nerf, bud. But good job. Good job.
All right.
Then up next, we have Laurasaurus with 99 attack on February 10th. Vantic, 99 invention on February 9th, and Alex Peaks with 99 divination on February 8th.
Rightio then, wrapping it out, we got Grayscale with 99 Slayer on the 8th, Peachy Reborn with 99 defense, and R3PO with 120 invention, all on February 8th. You know, we're taking it nice and calm here before the double XP torrent comes in.
Oh, it's coming.
I forgot to mention this during the stream, the streaming section, but when the double XP weekend hits, or weekend week thing hits, Game Blast is also happening.
Yeah, we're gonna be having a good chat about that. Yeah, on good. That episode.
There's a whole lot of streaming going on, and there's a whole lot of stuff going on. So yeah, hope you're going to talk about that at some point.
We definitely will, sure. And we're also going to talk about it on the round table that's happening that weekend as well. That's a very special RSBNB update for us.
Good.
Very special. All right, let's move into our pick of the week. So, what do you got for us, Diana?
So, my pick of the week is the game I've been playing this week called Coffee Talk. It's a little very chill game, actually, that came out quite recently. I've been following it on Twitter for a while, kind of in the development of it, by a little Indonesian indie studio. And I've seen someone describe it as a background music game. Basically, you are running a little coffee shop in an alternate fantasy Seattle, so this kind of modern fantasy orcs and things walking around as well. And these people come in, they order coffee, you make them coffee, and you listen to them. And there's some branching storylines in there. You're just talking to interesting people with a little bit of Coffee Simulator in there as well.
Interesting.
And it's really lovely, really chill. It's a great thing to have in the background. The pixel art's really pretty. It's got a lovely kind of muted color palette. And the music's this gorgeous kind of lo-fi, kind of jazzy, relaxing music to have on in the background.
Yeah, it almost looks like a modern kind of take on what the old 8-bit games used to look like.
Yeah, they took a lot of inspiration from games like that. And it's just been a really nice, relaxing kind of, I get home from work, oh God, I need to do something just to chill out for a bit. And it's just, you know, nice little de-stress. Yeah, came out a couple of weeks ago and it's currently a tenner on Steam, so... worth it, I'd say.
All right. It's about listening to modern people problems. So does that mean it's an eavesdropping simulator?
Kind of, I guess. But it's kind of these people come in and they have conversations. You just, you know, listen and contribute sometimes. It's very relaxed, very chill.
All righty, that's Coffee Talk on Steam. $14.49 Canadian, so I'd say probably, what, $9.99 US? Or I don't know how much it would be for you
probably,
folks over there.
Probably. I mean, I don't know how many beaver pelts and syrup jugs you need to get it, but...
All right.
$10 sounds right.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Tanis, what have you been up to on RS?
So, this week, I have been... a little bit of everything. I finally got my potions all set up and ready to go for double XP. Still need to get some shards for summoning. But other than that, been continuing our Reaper. And last night was a live stream. So our RSBNB live went live and it was awesome. I really enjoyed it. Had quite a few viewers and, I did Once Upon a Slime, and then we were going to do a Reaper, but he was being difficult, gave me like a Rax or just stupid stuff. So we ended up going and doing some Twins, because, you know, when in doubt, go do some Twins, I guess. But it was a lot of fun, really enjoyed it, and so there is more RSBNB content now.
Yeah, we'll
enjoy on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock.
RSBNB_Tanis79, I believe that was. Mm-hmm. We'll, of course, follow on Twitter at RSBNB. We'll tweet when that's happening. And, you know, it was really interesting and entertaining to watch you do a quest, because I've never actually seen you do a quest before with your magnifier and whatnot. So that's also a good look, because it's not just someone playing RS. It's someone playing RS who is using the magnifier to read and only focusing on a small portion of your screen. I thought that was really good how you segmented out your screen, how you have your view of exactly what you see, and then the general RS window there, and it shows really what a small window that you're looking at with it.
Yeah, so. Thanks. Yeah, that's been something that I try to incorporate, because I think it's something that people are, you know, they hear me talk about on the show, but it's kind of hard to put in perspective without being able to, you know, like, look at it. And then, of course, I had all my audio alerts going and stuff like that. So it was definitely a window to a play session for me. So, yeah, if you're interested in that, and we'll be doing different stuff, you know, every week. I'm 100% sure we're going to have people that you hear on the show probably come on and stream with me. I would not be surprised to see some of our better PVMers come by and give me a hand. I got a lot of plans for it, so I'm excited. That was a lot of fun.
Alrighty, and of course, I'll put a link to that stream in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com if anybody wants to see it. Diana, anything you want to report on aside from the quest or otherwise?
Well, my big kind of non-related RS-related news is that I built my first gaming PC last weekend.
Ooh.
So I think that means I'm finally going to have to get on with PVM at some point. I've done all the quests. I've done all the skills. I've got a decent PC. I've got no excuse now. Eventually, I'm going to have to start exploring killing some bosses.
Yeah,
God, right. Terrifying.
I mean, yeah, just start with the QBD and work your way up.
Work your way. Yeah. I can do God War Dungeon 1, and okay. I can do some of the. I can do God Wars 2. I think I can do a couple of them.
Oh, there
I can
you
do
go.
Vindicta on that one.
That's a good start. That's a good start.
So, yeah, getting there. But I literally have no excuse anymore, so I just need to bite the bullet
and
get on with it.
That's what I keep telling myself, too, but I always put it off. So.
Hey, you can take me with you. I'm a great meat shield.
Nice.
I just poke it up and eat.
Just like that time we went to go fight Siryu, right?
Oh, man.
Oh, I could do that. I could start doing Elite Dungeons. Haha.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
There we go. I'll start doing that.
Well, as for me, you know, I'm just continuing my Elder Log woodcutting. I realize how crazy that sounds for anybody out there, but that's the way I'm doing it. By my calculations, it would probably take me about a year and a half to do, to 120.
What?
With that.
Sorry, what are you doing?
Woodcutting to 120 with Elder Logs.
Why?
I love it.
I mean, bless you, but why?
I knew someone back in the day who would cut to 99 on Magics.
Oh,
so
wow.
I figure this is the next logical step on that.
I guess. How's that going for you?
It's slow. I'll just say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Very much. So...
to be fair, no matter what you do, it would be slow.
I think it's going to be about 80,000 logs, give or take.
Hey, you'll get paid, though.
Yeah, that's the idea with it. That's the idea with it. And speaking of that, the dinosaurs, the Rexes are still really good if anybody's got a Rex farm going in terms of the amount of dinosaur roars you can get. Also... frog slime. Each and every day you can pop some frogs and just buy it with beans, put them in there, and then at the end of the day you're going to get, you know, a free 600-700k by just doing that. So combining all of that together, since 120 farming came out at the end of November, I have made 320 million GP and I am well past 400 mil now. Just from farming.
Nice.
There you go.
Nice
so,
one.
So that's the progress report from me this week on that. But not too much else to report. So I think we can end this episode of RSBNB Update. And, you know, we couldn't, of course, do a quest week without having the full-blown discussion on that. So thank you for joining us, Diana.
Thank you for inviting me on. It's always been good fun to come on.
And with that being said, if anybody wants full show notes, you can find that at update.rsbnb.com. You can subscribe to the podcast on any podcast listener out there, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Pocket Cast, YouTube, anything under the sun. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe, and we'll see you all next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.
Bye-bye.